All right. Welcome back to the cast, everybody. Wanted to go over something that we've been hearing a lot about in the news, but a different perspective of it. And that's the Breonna Taylor killing. Now that that ruling has come down, people have been doing what people do. They've been going crazy, rioting, protesting, all over the country. Some policemen have been killed now during the thing, which I think is kind of odd. You know, if you're really, truly upset that a police officer has killed somebody and you truly care about that, that's, you know, that's understandable. But if you truly care about that, you can't go out and kill somebody in response to it, because that shows that you have no value for human life because you went out and tried to kill somebody. And wait, let me walk that back. I don't think the policemen were killed. They were shot during the protest. But anyway, if you go out to harm somebody, you can't really say that you're compassionate about somebody else being harmed. You know, you can't have it both ways. You can't be a predator and a victim at the same time. It's just not possible. But anyway, that's not the point of this particular cast. This podcast is about who is responsible for her death. Now, a lot of people are upset because they say the police are responsible for her death. Now, I'm not going to say that things could have been handled differently as far as how that warrant was handled. I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know all the details. I only know what I'm told and what was shown in the media. So, you know, maybe all of us have it a little bit wrong as far as what would happen. I also do know that when you are in a situation like that, you don't have the luxury of sitting behind a keyboard and thinking about how you would like to handle it and how you wish it was handled and how you think it should have been handled. You don't have that luxury when you're in the battlefield. You know, you have to react. You fall back on how you were trained and you automatically do what you're trained to do. So that's a, you know, another topic in itself. But were the police responsible for her death? I say no, they weren't. They were doing a job. They were instructed to do something that came from, you know, a lot of surveillance, a lot of police work, a lot of detective work, I'm sure. So a lot of people did a lot of stuff leading up to that moment. And those police officers that were there issuing that warrant were just simply doing a job that they were paid and instructed to do. They weren't there because she was black, because she was Hispanic, because she was white, because she was Asian, because she was Indian, because she was this or that. That had nothing to do with it. Race doesn't even play a factor in this, in my opinion. But they were there just to do a job, just like everybody else. They're earning a living. They're out doing what they feel is noble. You know, I'm sure most of these police officers that are out here on the streets these days, they feel like they're doing their duty to help the people. They're doing something worthwhile. They're trying to make a difference. Whether they are or not, you know, that's depends on each and every situation. But I'm sure that's why these people get into that line of work. Now, I don't feel that the police are responsible for her death. Again, I think I said that a second ago. They were just doing a job. Now, yes, the police did fire a weapon that did, in fact, lead to the death of Breonna Taylor. That's, you know, that's indisputable fact. We all know that is fact. It's in the record. It's been put all over the media. The police department has said, you know, that's a fact. We can't dispute that. So, yes, a police officer firing a gun did in fact lead to Breonna Taylor dying. Now, the police officer returned fire. They were fired upon. And I know before you get up huffy and puffy, I'm getting to the next point. Just kind of listen and take it in until I get all the way through. The police fired back. The person that was in her house, I think they said it was her boyfriend, fired on the police, and the police returned fire. So that, and again, is what they're trained to do. They are trained so that when they're in a situation where someone is trying to harm or kill them, their knee-jerk reaction is to protect themselves and the people around them, and that's exactly what they did in that situation. Now, again, how they got in that situation is debatable, but we're talking about as it was playing out. So maybe the no-knock door thing was – maybe that needs to be restructured in their police department there. Maybe. I don't know. Again, I don't know every single detail. I only know what I was told. And, you know, if nothing else, they need to look into it and see if that process can be improved. But there is some gray area. You know, the police say that they knocked and announced and then came in. The people inside said that they knocked and didn't announce who they were before coming in. So this is he said, she said. Maybe they did announce and the guy didn't hear. You know, sometimes it's hard to hear through doors and walls and whatnot, especially maybe they didn't announce loud enough. You know, maybe they, hey, it's the police. I don't know. Maybe they just didn't announce loud enough, or maybe they didn't announce. I don't know. Again, we don't have all those details. We just have two sides of the same story that don't work together. They contradict each other. So there's no way for us to know for sure how that was executed, aside from believing the side that you want to believe. You know, if you're Black Lives Matter protester, then you're going to believe that they didn't announce it. If you're backing the police officers, you're going to believe that they did announce it. So again, that's just a silly way of choosing sides. The proper thing to do would be to say, I don't know. Two people told me two different things. I don't know either of those people personally, so there's no way I can form an intelligent and rational decision based on hearsay. And that goes for both sides. If you're backing the police, you know, you can't just take their word for it because you weren't there, you don't know. If you're backing the protesters, you can't take, you know, Breonna Taylor's boyfriend's word on it because you don't know him and you don't know the situation. So both sides, you have to just call it a stalemate and agree to disagree because we don't know exactly what happened. So, and I'm driving to a point. I haven't got there yet. I'm just going, you know, here's the details leading up to it. So again, I asked the question, who is responsible for Breonna Taylor's death? And my answer to that is her boyfriend. I say her boyfriend is responsible for her death. Now, of course, he wouldn't physically intend on harming her, I'm sure, and he didn't point the gun. He didn't pull the trigger. He wasn't directly responsible for her death, but he was indirectly responsible for it. He was involved in a lot of crime, and that's all documented. Drugs, apparently there was in Breonna's car that her boyfriend borrowed periodically to go do drug deals and whatnot. There was at some point a dead person in the car, they were saying in the news outlets. He drove the car for criminal purposes to distribute and deal drugs. He was at her house. So, you know, he left a breadcrumb trail for the police to follow that led directly to Breonna Taylor. So I know when all my growing up years, quite a few, at least all the wise people told me to be careful who I hang out with. Be careful who I surround myself with, because I can be no better than the sum of the people that I'm surrounded with. So with that said, that leads to my point on why Breonna Taylor's boyfriend is responsible for her death. She allowed herself to be surrounded by people that were doing crimes, people that were doing bad things. She was a part of it, and you know, there's no way that she didn't know what he was up to. I mean, there is a way, but I highly doubt that this intelligent young lady didn't know that her boyfriend was up to no good and he was dealing and whatever else he was doing. She had to maybe not know all the details, but she had to be at least somewhat aware of what he was doing. And she allowed him to come to her house. She allowed him the use of her car. So she enabled him and basically was a conspirator to his crimes because of that. But that's a side note in itself. That's just mistakes that she made that led to this. But at the end of the day, the crimes her boyfriend committed, and the police watching him and doing stakeouts, investigations on the crimes he's doing, led them to Breonna Taylor and the standoff in her house. So, yes, and again, I'm not making light of her death. I think it's definitely a tragedy. She wasn't involved in any crimes, though she may have been possibly an accomplice. And if nothing else, she was definitely, an enabler and turning a blind eye to these crimes that were right in her doorstep. But I'm not making light of her death. I'm not glad she died. I wouldn't wish her to die. And if I was able to do anything to change that, I would definitely, do whatever I could to change that and bring her back. So it is a tragedy that she is gone and she's not here with her family and her friends and her loved ones anymore. That is undoubtedly fact, and I don't think anybody will argue that. But the responsible party for that is that boyfriend that brought the police there with his evil deeds and his criminal goings on. He's responsible for that. He brought those police to her house. He basically set in motion the events that led to her death. So before, and again, this is just my opinion. This is, if you think it's complete nonsense, take it with a grain of salt. But what I ask is that you just, food for thought. Think about it. Think about, the words I'm saying and how they apply to this situation. I'm not trying to change anybody's mind. I'm just trying to give a different viewpoint. I thought of this morning. I've heard a lot about this case for a long time now. And this morning that thought just popped into my head that how can you hang out with people that are doing crimes and being investigated and not fall prey to that yourself? In the business world, they say that quite a bit too, and I heard that growing up. Just, if you hang out with people that are committing crimes and doing bad things, you're going to go down with them. That was basically what my mom and my elders and whatnot had told me. You hang out with people doing crimes, even if you're innocent, even if you're not doing it, by association, you are guilty and you will end up in the same place they end up. And then when we opened our business, I heard the same thing in a different manner applied to a different thing. It was, if you want to be successful, you can't surround yourself with people that are not successful. You have to surround yourself with people who are successful, because those people are going to drive you to better things, and you're going to be guilty by association as far as success goes. If you're hanging out with successful people, you'll be guilty by associating with those successful people, and therefore have a higher likelihood of being successful yourself. Obviously, hanging out with somebody who's successful is not going to directly just invent you into success, but it'll put you in the right frame of mind and with the right mindsets of people to help you get there. So in my opinion, once again, I'll state that the cause of Breonna Taylor's death was being shot by a police officer who was returning fire. But what set that in motion was the company that she kept and what they did. So the crimes, the drugs, all that stuff that the boyfriend was doing brought that upon her, unfortunately. And I hope that he can take some responsibility for what his actions have led to. I hear a lot of him, shouting victim and, innocent and shouldn't have killed her and that was wrong. But in the scheme of things, he needs to take some responsibility because he brought that to her. He brought the police with guns drawn and warrants to Breonna Taylor. That was his doing that caused that. Even though he didn't directly cause the death, he brought the cause of death to her. So I hope that her family and his family lay some responsibility on him for that. And I hope he atones to his creator for for his part in what happened to her. Because again, I'm not saying that he should have any type of fate, or he should be killed, or this should happen, or he shouldn't be able to get a job because he did bad things. I'm not saying anything like that. You know, I'm all for forgiveness for people who not only make a change but ask for it. But you just have to be responsible for what you've done. That's where I'm at with this. So I hope that he takes some responsibility, quits pushing the blame off on everybody else when he's the one that set this in motion. I hope that her family can forgive the police that directly caused her death, as well as the boyfriend that indirectly caused her death. And I hope our nation can just stop all this nonsense. As soon as the verdict was released, I said to myself, it doesn't matter what the verdict is. It doesn't matter. If they take this guy out and shoot him in public in front of a crowd of people, if they let him off without anything and just, you know, you're free, have a great day. If they charge him with this, if they charge him with that, it didn't matter what the verdict was. These people that are protesting were going to protest. They were already prepared for it. They were waiting for it. And they weren't sitting at home going, oh, well, I'm going out tonight if they don't give the right verdict. But if they give a good verdict, I'm just going to stay home and watch MASH reruns on on the television. That wasn't what these people were thinking. They were prepared. They had everything they needed in order. They had to, you know, set aside mentally the time they were going to spend doing the protest. And the protests were going to happen no matter what the verdict was. End of story. Again, I know this is an opinion. It's my opinion. But and there's no way for me to prove it one way or another. But that's my feelings, is there was going to be a protest regardless of what the grand jury said in this case. I don't know what to do about that. And I really find it kind of odd that this whole case has become a race relations fiasco. Because if you really look into it, it's got nothing to do with race. Nothing to do with race. When these warrants were given, when these police were dispatched to come and, you know, take care of issuing this warrant, they didn't know that she was black specifically. Maybe the boyfriend they knew because they'd been looking into him for a long time. So they may have known he was black, but the officers that were executing the warrant may not have. I don't know. But to say that that happened because she was black or he was black or they were black, I find that a little far-fetched. You know, that doesn't, the way that played out, that doesn't act like a race-motivated goings-on. You know, she wasn't shot because she was black. She was shot because they went into a house to fulfill a warrant. Somebody shot at them, they shot back. She was a casualty of that crossfire. It was nothing to do with black or white or anything else. So sometimes, yes, there are issues that are specifically racially motivated. I understand that, and I don't deny that those are actual issues, though I do disagree with how everything is kind of pushed that, because these days if someone who of color, you know, if something happens to them, they automatically become the victim, and it's automatically about race when it's not always about race. Sometimes it is. I'm not going to deny that, but it's not always. But in the news, everything is about race. If it involves a white person and a black person and something bad happening, it's always race, always race, always race. The white guy is always the villain, and the black person is always the victim. You know, I don't know what we can do about that, but it's just a messed up thing in our society now, and we need to cut it out. We need to come together. I will, and again, this is something that I can't prove statistically, but I would say, as far as white people go, and I'm a white person, the greater percentage of all white people, and I would go so far as to say 98 to 99% of all white people are not racist people. Not at all. Not racist people. Yes, there are racist people. white people, they're a small percentage of the very small percentage of the population of that race. But I would be willing to bet that in the black race has an equal amount of racist people. People try to say black people can't be racist, but honestly, they can be racist just as much and easily as any other race of people. And I would say that, you know, maybe they go about racism in a different way, those particular people, but I would be willing to bet that there's just as many people who are racist that are of different races other than white. White people aren't the only people who can be racist. I think what a lot of people end up doing is they take prejudice and call it racism. Racism and prejudice are different things, totally different things. And I'm going to go ahead and say this. Everybody of every race is prejudiced. Everybody of every race is prejudiced. And, you know, some of you may be listening to this, if anybody listens to it anyway, some of you may be listening to this and going, oh, no, that's not me. You got me all wrong. I'm not prejudiced. Yes, you are. There's certain things you don't like. There's certain people you don't like. There's certain kinds of people you don't like, not necessarily a skin color, but maybe you don't like people who wear these kind of clothes. Maybe you don't like people who talk this certain way. Maybe you don't like people that are from this part of the world. Maybe you don't like people with that certain job. Maybe you don't like redheads. Maybe you don't like Irish people. You know, maybe you don't like people who drink. Maybe you don't like people who smoke. I'm a little prejudiced against people who smoke, honestly. But we're all prejudiced. All prejudiced. And again, it doesn't necessarily boil down to a skin color or prejudice don't. They can, I suppose. But I think it's more socioeconomic. You know, if I'm in, what, here in the South, white people don't live necessarily in ghettos. They're more known to live in trailer parks or trailer courts. When I go into some of those places, I don't feel comfortable. I watch people and I'm suspicious, especially if I look at them and they look, you know, thuggish. I watch them a little closer. I'm suspicious of what they might do. And these are white people that look, you know, if we all take our clothes off, we all look the same as far as our skin tone and similar other than that. But I'm prejudiced to those people because they bother me. I don't know where they come from. I don't know how they think. They look different than me, even though they're the same skin tone. And it makes me a little uncomfortable. Now, that doesn't mean that I hate them. It doesn't mean that I want to kill them or hurt them or, you know, put them in a special place away from me. It just means that I watch them a little more close. It just means that I'm a little bit more protective over my personal self and my family. No big deal, right? When I go into a place where somebody doesn't belong, and that, again, it has to do with skin color a lot, but no specific skin color. You know, if I'm in a black neighborhood that's on near, you know, projects like lower income black neighborhoods, I'm a little put off because I know I don't fit in. And I know that community is looking at me as an outsider and as somebody that doesn't fit in and wondering, what's that white guy doing here? He doesn't belong. He must be up to something. So I'm a little leery in those situations. And the people in those neighborhoods in that situation, they have every right to be leery of me because I don't belong there. And they have every right to wonder what I'm doing there. Am I up to something? Am I out to get somebody? Am I a cop? Am I looking for this? Am I looking for that? They have every right to be that way. And that's a prejudice towards me. And I'm not upset by that. You know, if I go into a neighborhood that's all white and there's, you know, one black guy in there and he doesn't fit in, you know, sometimes, you know, when you go to some places and people fit in no matter what their skin color is. You know, I've had groups of black and Asian people and they all get along and they all, you know, dress somewhat similarly. And when you see that group of people, you don't think anything about it because they all fit together. Right? Even though they may look different, they all fit together. But when people don't fit together, that's when the prejudice kick in. And that's when you start to wonder what they're up to. And I do the same thing with white people. You know, I live on a pretty quiet street. There's not a Well, we have a couple of black families that live on our street, but they're older families mainly. But when I see somebody on my street that doesn't belong, and it doesn't really matter if they're black or white, it's just that they don't belong. You know, I haven't seen them before. We don't get a lot of outsiders on our street. We know who lives here. We recognize the cars. We recognize most of the faces. We even recognize a lot of the people that visit the people on our street. You know, we may see the Honda Accord across the street quite often, and we know that's just a visitor that comes by all the time, and we're all right with that. But when we see somebody walking down the street that doesn't belong, you know, we've never seen them before. They're not there, to the best of our knowledge, visiting somebody that lives on our street. Yeah, I get a little defensive. I watch them. I have a prejudice against that. They don't belong. What are they doing here? Are they here to harm somebody? Are they here for, you know, no good reasons? Are they here to commit a crime? What are they doing? So prejudices are pretty normal. It's actually a self-defense mechanism that's built into our instincts to help protect us. You know, think about prejudice from times long ago. You know, when we all lived in tribes and we didn't have brick houses and all that. You know, when somebody came that didn't belong, and again, skin color doesn't necessarily matter in this, but it could. Somebody that doesn't belong comes into your tribe, you have to be aware of that, and you have to be apprehensive about that because they may be there for no good. So prejudice is a self-defense mechanism that our brain does to protect ourselves, and there's nothing wrong with it. Now, racism, there's something wrong with that. There's something wrong with that. And, you know, if you have those thoughts and in your heart, then you need to pray, and you need to have a little talk with your creator, and you need to sit down and try to figure out how you can remove that from your heart so you can be a better human being and a better member of society, right? Because, you know, hating somebody just because they're black or just because they're this, or hating anybody for any reason is actually, it's not good. I don't even hate my enemies. There's a lot of people I dislike, but I don't hate anybody. Hate is a super strong word. Hating somebody means that you could kill that person in cold blood and not even care. That's what hatred is. Hatred is being able to disfigure somebody and not care about what you've done or who you've done it to, in my opinion. You know, back in the old days, as slavery was coming to an end here in the United States, there was a lot of hatred towards black people. And a lot of white people did awful, awful things. And they had not a concern in the world for what they did to that person. That's hatred. Hatred will allow you to do anything to anybody. Hatred will allow you to justify your actions no matter what they are. And it'll make you callous to any of your actions. So hatred in any shape, form, or fashion is just wrong. It needs to be erased from all of our hearts. We can't grow as a people as long as there is hate in our hearts, period. Period. As a society, if we have hate in our society, we can't grow. We cannot grow. And matter of fact, if we have hate, racism is the least of our problems. Because hate is hate. No matter who it is you're hating, hate is hate. So as long as there is hate, racism will be around. Yeah. It's small pockets of society that have those particular thoughts, but it's all based on hatred and fear. Hatred and fear. So I'll finish up. This is about almost a half hour long. I've been spitting words now. But in closing, what I want to advise everybody is if you find, dig deep in yourself and see if you have hatred in your heart at all. And if you do, and you're religious, pray. Pray for God to remove that hatred from your heart so you can live more pure and you can be a better member of society. If you're not religious, then just do your best to change your thinking to remove that hate. If we can all remove the hate from our heart, then we don't have to have protest. Matter of fact, these protests are based off of hate anyway. People hate things so much that they have to go out and smash things and burn things and hurt people to make themselves feel better or vindicated from their hate. You know, there's a lot of revenge seeking going on. There's a lot of vengeance seeking going on. Revenge and vengeance, those things are born from hate. They ain't born from love. I'll guarantee you that, because people who love don't go out and do things that hurt other people. And doing things that hurt other people is no way to fix ugly things that somebody else did. You can't fix death with death. You can't fix hate with hate. We just have to get past all this and have some love. We need to quit doing all this nonsense, hurting each other, yelling at each other, being divided, thinking we're different, thinking we're better than another person. We need to cut all this nonsense out and start loving each other and become a good society. Some would argue, but I would say like we once were. Now, obviously, we're a flawed society. We're a flawed people. But we're making headway. We've come a long way over the years. We've done a lot of bad stuff as a people. But I think we've learned from it, and we've grown past it now. And now it's time to learn and grow past this nonsense too. All right? So love one another. Don't worry if you're prejudiced, because that's normal. It's a self-defense mechanism to keep us safe. There's no way to get around it. And don't be racist. And erase the hate from your heart. So that's all I got for you guys today. We'll see you on the next one.